Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC, and so most of these sermons are from me. So according to the liturgical calendar, which is the church calendar, today, actually tomorrow, is the day of Epiphany. We're going to celebrate it today because we have to go back to work tomorrow, right? So we're going to do it today. Epiphany is always 12 days after Christmas. The same 12 days that we sing about in the song on the first day of Christmas, on the second day of Christmas. So technically, if you still have some shopping to do for Christmas, please know that you have one day left. Technically, you won't be late until tomorrow. We call this day Epiphany, which comes from the Greek verb epiphaneia, which means to appear. It oftentimes is used for the idea of a manifestation. Because it's when, according to the theologians and to the biblical scholars, that's when the people just sort of, they got it. They had an epiphany, how we use that word. They understood who Jesus was, that he was indeed the Son of God. And so we use that as a way of having one of those experiences when all of a sudden the lights go on. Things become clear. We understand our place and our role in the world. It's also the occasion, according to tradition, where the wise men from the east reached the newborn Christ to offer him their gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. It's a story that we all know incredibly well, right? Well, let's just see. To prove this, we're going to take a little quiz. And so I want you to, you don't have to, you can shout them out if you want, but maybe it might be easier just to sort of have a competition with the person sitting next to you to see how you do in this quiz. Are you ready? First of all, who were these wise people? Who were they? Kings from the east, okay. We just sang the hymn, We Three Kings, right? Well, according to the tradition, I guess you could say, you'll hear in just a few moments that Matthew says that they were wise men. Other traditions, other readings often say that they were magi. Doesn't say anywhere that they were actually kings. Now, a magi is sort of a magician, an astronomer, astrologer. They're not exactly sure. But maybe the thing about being kings is sort of made up from legends more than anything else. Where were they from? Somebody said a minute ago, from the east, right? So Dallas, Grand Prairie, over in that area, maybe as far away as Louisiana, maybe that's far exactly. How many of them were there? Three. Actually, according to every nativity scene, every crush scene that you have in your house, there were indeed three. We heard just a moment ago, three kings, three wise men. The truth is, we don't know. Doesn't say anywhere. It just says that they brought three gifts, and so the assumption was that they each brought one, but it doesn't say that. We'll be reading this morning from Matthew's version. What does Mark say about this story? Anybody know? Nothing, exactly. You're exactly right. That's a trick question. He doesn't even mention the birth. Doesn't mention the birth at all. He begins with the baptism of Jesus. Now, what about Luke? Luke was the story that we read on Christmas Eve. What does Luke say about this story? Nothing. He doesn't mention it at all. You see, what I'm trying to say is that we have a lot of assumptions, presuppositions about this story, most of which are based upon legend, upon artists, among musicians, among midrash, which are stories about stories in the Bible. But what we lack are a lot of details. But here is what we do know. And so I invite you to listen to this story from Matthew chapter 2.
Verse From Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people, Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may go pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. The word of God for the people of God.
So before I begin this morning, I just want to say that it is good to be here this morning. After 25 years in ministry, I have never once missed a Sunday due to illness. And then all of a sudden on the fourth Sunday of Advent, I come down with something and all of a sudden I find myself unable to be here on Christmas Eve. It was unthinkable for me. And so it is good for me to be back. I want to thank you for the prayers that you have offered over the last couple of weeks, and the notes and the texts and the calls. Please know that it meant so much to me. As often happens in situations like this, it's the minister that is ministered to. And so I want to simply say thank you. And I also want to say a special thanks to the staff who stepped in so admirably. They didn't miss a step in the midst of an incredibly busy time for them to take on my role as well. I'm overwhelmed with gratitude for Shannon, for Renee, for the rest of the clergy team. They were absolutely incredible. I want to let you know, I've been getting a lot of questions. I am feeling better. I'm not all better, but certainly better. As I told somebody the other day, I'm not 100%, but I'm 100% better than I was. The truth was, I was pretty sick for a while. I spent a couple days in the hospital. We weren't sure for a while what it was. We spent the first few days that I was there, that I was sick, eliminating all of the big scary stuff, but finally what they settled on, well, let me start by saying, in the midst of that time when they couldn't figure out what it is, my kids got really excited that maybe they were going to be able to name this new disease that I had come down with. They knew it wasn't the flu, they knew it wasn't some other things, and so they started coming up with ideas of what we were going to call this. One of my daughters said Russitis was going to be the name of this newfangled disease. My son said dreaded bald man's disease was what we were going to call it. I told him to enjoy this because someday he was going to have this dreaded bald man's disease, that it's heretical. But finally what they determined is that somehow I contracted typhus, which is not something that I knew what was. And so I am indeed on the road to a full recovery. I'm not there yet, but I'm along the way. And again, I want to thank you for your prayers and for your outpouring of love. Please know how much it has meant to me over the last few weeks. So here we are on this first Sunday of the new year, the beginning of a new calendar year. It's always a time, isn't it, when we sort of reassess the direction of our lives. We ask questions about who we are, about where we're going in life. And so over the next several weeks, during this season of Epiphany, we're going to take a deep journey into the question of who are you? Who are you? And we'll hopefully discover, as I said earlier, that who we are is indelibly linked to whose we are. And so we're going to look at what amazing things might happen if we can somehow live into our best, most passionate, most authentic, loving self. And so we're going to look at that, what that might look like over the next several weeks. The story that we just heard, as I said, is one of my favorites. Barbara Brown Taylor, who's one of my favorite preachers, once said that the story of the Magi that we just heard, it ranks up there with some of the greatest stories ever told. It captures our imagination. We put it up against the Christmas story, the Easter story. We could put it up against Romeo and Juliet, the Velveteen Rabbit, the Wizard of Oz. It stands up. For centuries, poets like Yeats have wrapped words around the visit of the wise men. Longfellow even named them. Melchior, Gaspar, and Balthazar. Artists like Botticelli and Rembrandt and countless others have painted this and allowed us to see it in new ways. Garrison Keillor told the story on Prairie Home Companion. James Taylor wrote a song about it. It is a fascinating story. There's something about this story that just sort of connects with us at a very primitive yet a very profound place within us. Because I think that like those wise men of old, we are all in search of something. Something that will help us gain a sense of clarity about who we are and about whose we are. I also believe that the journey to find it may be the most important journey that any of us ever take in our entire lives. About a decade ago, I was at an incredibly difficult time in my life. Be completely honest. My first marriage had fallen apart. I was suffering from depression. My life was sort of a mess. I was depressed. I was stuck. I was frustrated, confused. To be honest with you, my faith was in shreds, which, as you can imagine, as a minister, is not a good place to be. And I remember in the midst of that crisis, there's no other word for it, in the midst of that crisis, I turned to a friend and I just sort of tried to explain it, that I had this sense that I was searching for something, but I couldn't quite articulate what it was. I told my friend, I said, I don't know what the word is. It's not happy. It's not content. I don't want to be comfortable. That's not what it is. And in that moment, my friend simply said, authentic? And in that moment, it was like the light came on. That was exactly it. It was like I'd been humming this tune that I couldn't quite place the song. And in that moment, she began to sing it word for word. That was exactly it. I wanted to be authentic. I wanted to be genuine. I wanted to be real. I wanted to be present. I wanted to be alive, to be fully awake in this world, to be fully here. I wanted to be human in the fullest sense of the word. Which meant that my spirit was in touch with that piece of divinity that is within each and every one of us. And I wanted to be in touch with that place within my spirit, but more importantly, or just as importantly, I also wanted to be in touch with that spirit of divinity within those people that were closest to me. And all around, I wanted to be authentic. And I knew at that moment in my life that it was going to take a lot of risk. It was going to take a lot of risk. I also knew that I had no other choice. That up until that point, I had been, in some ways, sort of living somebody else's life. The expectations that people had placed on me about what it meant to be me, I had been living according to a life that I thought that I needed to be living. But I wasn't living the life that was mine. I was living somebody else's life. Joseph Campbell once said, "The spiritual imperative to be ourselves is so strong that the soul would rather fail at its own life than to succeed at someone else's life." The spiritual imperative to be ourselves is so strong that the soul would rather fail at its own life than to succeed at somebody else's life. That's exactly where I was at that difficult time in my life. Mark Nepo knows all about this. He wrote a book a few years ago called The Exquisite Risk. It's a book, quite literally, about living an authentic life, about becoming the person that God created and intended you to be. And he says, when you choose to live that way, there was always
the need to risk something new. Now, what you need to know about Nepo is that he is a cancer survivor. And this quest of his to live this authentic life, it began in the midst of his battle with cancer. He was getting ready for his second round of chemo, and he was given a prescription for Ativan. And now Ativan, if you've ever been on this, you may know, has a tendency to cause short-term amnesia. And the chemo was, as he says, as horrible as it could be, but he made it through with the help and the support of his family and his friends. And several weeks later, things started arriving in the mail. Apparently, he had ordered Broadway tickets, books, CDs, and most strangely, 6 airline tickets to St. Martin's in the Caribbean. Now, he will tell you that to this day, he has no recollection of buying any of that. But he took it as a sign, as a symbol, that he was looking for something more in his life. That he was hungry for something deeper, that part of him started living in the midst of that brush with death. There was a part of him that started holding nothing back. He also says in his book that he returned it all, except those airline tickets to St. Martin. He kept those by his bed on the bedside table. Is a promise to him and to his family that if he survived that cancer, that his family would go as a celebration of this new life that he found. And that's exactly what they did. Church, isn't that why we make New Year's resolutions every year? To sort of help us live our best life? To live the best version of ourselves? That's why we resolve to lose that 5 pounds, or the 5 pounds that we didn't lose last year, plus the 5 pounds that we need to lose this year. Isn't that why we decide that we're going to watch less TV, we're going to read more? Whatever it is for you, we're going to go to the gym, so we sign up for the gym again. By the way, I learned that over 40% of gym memberships begin in January and go unused by March. No judgment, I've been in that same place myself. But I would argue that in many ways, all of these resolutions, all of these things that we do, in some ways, just sort of point us towards something different, maybe something that is somewhat misplaced in our lives. That there's something deep within us that wants to be the person, the best version of ourselves. It's a vow to be better people. But I wonder if it's all an attempt to find something deeper, something much more difficult to define, something difficult to articulate. That maybe all of those resolutions that we make are more a nudge for us to live more authentically. Parker Palmer is one of my favorite authors. He wrote a book a few years ago that quite literally changed my life. It's called Let Your Life Speak. And I would say that if you're going to read just one book this year, that I encourage it to be that one. It is that spectacular. In that book, he says, "Before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I must listen to my life telling me who I am." Let me say that again. Before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I must listen to my life telling me who I am. You see, I believe that the work of the season of Epiphany is to find a sense of clarity, to find those moments when we become clear who we are, to begin daring to live the authentic life, to move off of that place where we may feel stuck, confused, to begin to live the one life that has been entrusted to us. The great poet Mary Oliver once wrote a poem called The Journey. And she says this. She says, "One day you will finally knew what you had to do, and you began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, but little by little you left their voices behind. And the stars began to burn through the sheets of the clouds, and there was a new voice. There was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own. That kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the one thing that you could do, determined to save the only life that you could save. You see, the work of this sacred season is the journey towards the life that God is inviting us to. Did you notice my favorite part of the whole story? That last line that Skylar read just a minute ago. "And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way." They went home a different way. To me, in other words, that's another way of saying the old ways of living, it's not going to work anymore. It simply will not do. That what happened in that encounter with the Christ child, it was so incredible, it was so miraculously, that they were now different people. And they went home a different way. You see, church, I believe with all that I am that the world is full of stars in the east. That there are events, there are moments in our lives that point us towards the fullness that God intends for us, that allows us to see the divine presence in people, in places, and maybe even within ourselves. So this morning, as we begin a new year together, I would simply ask, what path forward is God shining for you? Truth is, we can't go back. We cannot go back from where we came. There is a light shining our path forward. And it shines upon our hopes and our dreams for a better future, for a more authentic life. You see, last week we gathered around the promise that Christ has come. The light of the world, and in all of his table-turning, rule-breaking glory, he has come, helping us to see the world, helping us to see ourselves in new ways, and we can't go back. Instead, we begin to go home by another way. So, church, may you find the star that God has hung out for you. And may you follow that path that God's light has shined, that you might discover what it means to live more authentically, to move towards life in its fullest, and may you discover joy beyond your imagination. So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.